Good day. Welcome to another episode of the Audible Local Ledger Reads to the Blind podcast. You can get more information at audiblelocalledger.org. Stay tuned for today's reading.
Hello, this is Daphne, and I am reading to you today the Cape Cod Times. It's Thursday, March the 7th, and we begin with the weather. Today, rain and drizzle, breezy in the afternoon, a high of 50. Tonight, breezy, rain and drizzle early, cloudy, low of 36. Tomorrow, Friday, times of clouds and sun, high of 42, low of 33. Saturday, cloudy, high of 42, low of 37. Sunday, breezy. In the morning, downpours, and we need to watch for flooding, high of 50, low of 33. And for Monday, breezy in the morning, mostly cloudy, high of 46, low of 34. And we've gained a little more sunlight. Today, the sun rose at 6:06 and will set at 5:39, which gives us 11 hours and 33 minutes of daylight. And we move on to the lottery. For the numbers game, the midday drawing yesterday, the numbers are 3, 5, 0, and 1. Again, the midday drawing for the numbers game for Wednesday, March the 6th, 3, 5, 0, 1. And the evening drawing, the numbers are 4, 9, 3, 5. Again, the evening drawing for the numbers game, 4, 9, 3, 5. For mass cash, drawn on Wednesday, the 6th of March, the numbers are 1, 12, 21, 22, and 30. Again, the numbers are 1, 12, 21, 22, and 30 for mass cash. For Powerball, drawn yesterday, the 6th of March, the numbers are 6, 19, 28, 44, 60, the Powerball of 10. Again, Powerball drawn yesterday, the 6th of March, the numbers are 6, 19, 28, 44, 60, with the Powerball of 10. For Mega Millions, drawn on Tuesday, March the 5th, the numbers are 2, 49, 50, 61, 70, with a Mega Ball of 14. Again, Mega Millions, drawn on Tuesday, the 5th of March, the numbers are 2, 49, 50, 61, 70, and the Mega Ball of 14. For Mega Bucks, drawn yesterday, Wednesday, the 6th of March, the numbers are 17, 19, 29, 31, 39, and 44. Again, for Mega Bucks, drawn yesterday, the 6th of March, the numbers are 17, 19, 29, 31, 39, and 44. And Lucky for Life, the numbers drawn yesterday, Wednesday, March the 6th, the numbers are 13, 24, 28, 36, 38, with a lucky ball of 1. Again, Lucky for Life, drawn yesterday, March the 6th, the numbers are 13, 24, 28, 36, 38, with the lucky ball of 1. Our front page story is entitled SWAT Team Negotiating with Barricaded Suspect. And this story was updated this morning at 6 a.m. on social media, so I'm going to read the updated story. Police say Hyannis standoff suspect shot at SWAT team with rifle and handgun. And this is reported by Zane Razak for the Cape Cod Times. A 30-year-old man was taken into custody by a SWAT team without injury after he barricaded himself in a St. Francis Circle home and shot at police, according to the Barnstable Police Department. Justin Marrera was charged with several counts of attempted murder and firearms charges, police said in a written statement Wednesday night. Cape and Islands District Attorney Robert J. Galibois was on the scene during the hours-long standoff. He was, quote, very grateful that it ended peacefully. I highly commend the tremendous and professional efforts of all law enforcement agencies that were involved today. It is because of their work this ended peacefully, Galibois said. Around 7:41 a.m. on Wednesday, Barnstable police officers were called to the St. Francis Circle home after receiving a report that a man was holding his mother at knife point, according to police. The caller told the dispatcher he, his mother, and another female had barricaded themselves in a room, and Marrera, who was likely armed, was somewhere inside the house, according to police. Barnstable police arrived on scene and safely evacuated the family out of a window of the home. Officers also immediately, quote, contained the suspect, close quote, inside the house, according to police. The family told police Marrera likely had access to firearms inside the house. The Cape Cod Regional SWAT team was called to the scene and took over command of the police response. Attempts to get the suspect to leave the house and surrender to police were unsuccessful. At some point, he began firing on the SWAT team's ballistic vehicle with a firearm, police said. The vehicle protected SWAT team members inside, quote, as bullets ricocheted off the side of the armored truck, according to police. On-scene negotiators and the police department's mental health clinician tried to convince the man to come out of the home peacefully, but he refused and continued to periodically fire rifle and handgun rounds at SWAT officers surrounding the house, according to the police department. At one point, Massachusetts State Police sent a robotic dog inside the home to try and find and convince the man to come out of the home, but he allegedly shot the robot and partially disabled it. Later in the standoff, the SWAT team deployed a form of pepper spray into the house, but the man remained inside. Finally, a specialty ballistic vehicle with an attached demolition tool arrived on the scene and was used to, quote, forcibly encourage the man to exit the residence, according to police. The suspect was held at the Barnstable Police Department Wednesday night and is scheduled to be arraigned in the Barnstable District Court on Thursday, according to police. Initially, a shelter-in-place order was sent out for a one-mile radius of the incident, and police evacuated homes for emergency purposes. Kathy Rose lives in a small ranch-style house on Eldridge Avenue, which intersects with St. Francis Circle. Police and the SWAT team arrived around 7:30 a.m., she said, and put their gear on in front of her house. She did not know what was going on, but decided it was best to leave the area. She and most of the people left the house. When she came back home, she found reporters and TV cameras staked out by her house to cover the unfolding situation. Quote, I'm just so scared, she said. It's too close for comfort. Close quote. The intersection between St. Francis Circle and Eldridge Avenue was later blocked off. Meanwhile, Barnstable Public Schools were put under a shelter-in-place/modified lockdown on due to police activity in Hyannis, according to an email sent to the district community. The list included Barnstable High School, Barnstable Intermediate School, Hyannis West Elementary School, Enoch Cobb Early Learning Center, Barnstable Community Innovation School, and the Transportation/Facilities Office. No one was permitted to enter or exit the schools when the lockdown/shelter-in-place was active. Quote, there is no threat directed to any of our schools. We will provide updates at a later point in time. Close quote, the alert said. The Barnstable Police Department and the police chief told local school administrators around 10:30 a.m. that there was no danger to any students attending nearby schools because the suspect was inside his home. The lockdown was lifted by dismissal. This is news about Super Tuesday. Cape Cod favors Trump, Biden as nominees. And this is reported by Denise Coffey. Cape voters made their presidential preferences clear Tuesday. If the November election was held today in Barnstable County, it would be a rematch between President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump, based on unofficial results reported Wednesday by 15 town clerks. For Democrat voters, Biden was the top vote-getter in Barnstable County. Dean Phillips and Marianne Williamson came in far behind the votes the president garnered. For Republican voters, Trump was the front runner in nearly every town. In Eastham and Provincetown, Nikki Haley edged out Trump for presidential preference. Haley suspended her presidential campaign on Wednesday. Voter turnout on Cape Cod hovered between 31% and 39%, according to figures given by town clerks in Bourne, Brewster, Chatham, Falmouth, Orleans, and Sandwich. Nearly 25% of voter turnout was by mail, according to Orleans town clerk Kelly Darling. Quote, "The total turnout yesterday was 37%, she said. Quote, "In the 2020 presidential primary, turnout was 51%, close quote. On Tuesday, based on the party, voters chose their preference for U.S. president, and then for a state committeeman and state committeewoman for their party. Voters also had a choice, still by party, of town or ward committee members. Voters in Bourne, Falmouth, Mashpee, and Sandwich were voting for state committee candidates for the Plymouth and Barnstable senatorial district. The remaining Cape towns voted for state committee candidates for the Cape and Islands senatorial districts. Towns on Martha's Vineyard and Nantucket are included in the Cape and Islands district. Massachusetts has 40 state senatorial districts. Candidates voted to be members of the Democratic and Republican state committees work in cooperation with the National Party Committee and with ward and town committees. Brian Dunn, a Democratic candidate for state committee man for the Plymouth and Barnstable district, won in 4 Cape towns in the district. Amy Coulard, a Democratic candidate for state committee woman, won in the 4 towns as well. Republican state committee candidates for the Plymouth and Barnstable district, James McMahon III and Alice Zinkovich, won in all 4 Cape towns as well. Democratic candidate Robin Hubbard won in 11 Cape towns for state committee woman in the Cape and Islands district. Jeremy Como won in 8 towns for state committee man, and Owen Fletcher won in 3. Republican candidate Judith Crocker won in 10 Cape towns except for Provincetown, where she and Darrellyn Haywood tallied the same number of votes. William Crocker Jr. won in 11 towns for state committee man for the Cape and Islands district. Final tallies for all candidates must be confirmed by the Secretary of State. And a story about our whales. Newborn right whale calf dies of boat injuries, reported by Heather McCarran. In another blow to the North Atlantic right whale population, a newborn calf has died, putting the death toll for the critically endangered animals at 5 in just the last 3 months. On March the 3rd, 2 months after fishermen spotted it offshore from Edisto, South Carolina, with its head, mouth, and lips cut open by a boat propeller, the calf was reported dead on Cumberland Island National Seashore in Georgia, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Fisheries Division. The baby was the firstborn of the current calving season. It was initially spotted with its mother, Juno, listed as number 1612 in the North Atlantic Right Whale Catalog on November 28th. It was Juno's 8th known calf since 1986. Quote, "The carcass was heavily scavenged by sharks. Responders identified it as Juno's calf based on the unique injuries and markings documented when the calf was alive, NOAA Fisheries reported this week. Due to the state of the carcass, we will use genetic testing to determine the sex, close quote. The calf is the second North Atlantic right whale in less than a month to die after being struck by a vessel. The other was a female yearling found dead offshore of Savannah, Georgia, on February the 13th. The first known offspring of Pilgrim, number 4340, a local favorite thought to have been born in 2013 in the warm waters of Cape Cod Bay near the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station. Vessel strikes and entanglements in traditional fishing gear are now considered the top threats to the survival of the species. Within the calf's family alone, its mother, Juno, has suffered from 4 entanglements, and other family members have experienced 24 entanglements and 2 vessel strikes, according to data from the New England Aquarium. The latest population study, released this fall, estimated the population at about 356 individuals, plus or minus 7, with relatively few reproductively mature females. It's a sad situation, said Philip Hamilton, a senior scientist at the New England Aquarium's Anderson Cabot Center for Ocean Life. Although the baby was observed nursing in the days following its injury, reported on January the 3rd, and seemed to be getting enough nutrition based on its body condition, researchers said earlier on that its prognosis was not optimistic. The calf's mouth and lips were, quote, so structurally damaged, Hamilton said. In my assessment, it would have been challenging to open its mouth to swim along the surface to feed after weaning, close quote. So far this calving season, which extends from mid-November to mid-April, 19 calves have been born into the population. Juno's calf is one of the 3 mortalities among the newborns. While Juno's calf is the only one whose remains have been found, 2 other newborns are no longer with their mothers and are presumed deceased from unknown causes. Beside the 3 calves and the yearling found off Georgia, a 3-year-old female, number 5120, washed up dead on Martha's Vineyard on January the 28th. That individual suffered a chronic entanglement with traditional fishing rope, consistent with rope used in Maine state waters for trap/pot buoy lines, according to NOAA Fisheries. The loss of females is especially troublesome, Hamilton said, since each one may produce upwards of 10 offspring over a lifetime. Charles Stormy Mayo, director of the Right Whale Ecology Program at the Center for Coastal Studies in Provincetown, has noted there are only about 70 reproducing females who don't reach maturity until about age 10. On top of that, researchers have noted a lower birth rate and longer intervals between births. Hamilton said science is still being done on the reproductive success of male right whales, though it's thought most of them sire only a few calves, quote, with 1 or 2 exceptional males siring up to 10, close quote. If that is the case, the species' ability to rebound is more closely tied to the survival of females. But that's challenging when the whales face threats from entanglements and boat strikes. Every injury from these causes is a concern, scientists such as Mayo and Hamilton say, because it can lead to an individual's death or disrupt a whale's ability to thrive and successfully reproduce to help replenish the population. Quote, as always, those 2 issues are just front and center, Hamilton said. There are some protections in place, but scientists and conservation says they don't go far enough to protect the whales throughout their habitat, territory that stretches the length of the eastern seaboard up to the Canadian Maritimes. U.S. Representative Bill Keating, who on Tuesday discussed various subjects during a meeting with Times reporters, said measures such as seasonal speed zones where the whales are active and ropeless fishing gear programs are not consistent throughout the whales' habitat. Massachusetts has some of the strongest regulations in place, he acknowledged, but many other areas don't do enough. He supports strengthening and expanding seasonal speed requirements consistently throughout the habitat and financial assistance for fishermen to convert to fishing gear that reduces or eliminates the need for ropes. At the federal level, stronger rules are under consideration, and conservationists are urging immediate action, particularly in southeastern waters where calving happens and where mothers and calves are especially vulnerable. At present, Hamilton said, speed restrictions along much of the mid-Atlantic apply only to vessels over 65 feet in length and are in place only in certain areas. According to NOAA Fisheries, initial findings from the investigation into the death of Juno's calf suggest the vessel involved in the calf's injury was smaller, likely 35 to 57 feet in length. Quote, we cannot save North Atlantic right whales from impending extinction if we do not take common sense measures to protect them, especially calves and juveniles, from being run over and killed by boats, said Jane Davenport, a senior attorney at Defenders of Wildlife, in an email this week. Existing federal seasonal speed restrictions are outdated and protect, quote, limited areas where right whales showed activity in 2008, the organization said. Proposed expanded speed rules, first published in 2022, would require vessels between 35 and 57 feet long to comply with seasonal slowdowns along with the larger vessels. Oceana insists that an updated vessel speed rule covering the smaller boats, plus increased enforcement, are both necessary to protect right whales. According to the organization's analysis, nearly 80% of ships already subject to mandatory speed limits, 65 feet and over, violated these limits during the period Juno's calf was struck and left with critical injuries, close quote. Quote, our governor already knows what to do to protect these critically endangered whales, so why are they sitting on it? Close quote, said Hermina Glass-Hill, a senior field representative for Oceana out of Georgia, in a statement issued Tuesday. Quote, Secretary of Commerce Gina Raimondo and President Biden need to immediately release the updated vessel speed rule their own agency proposed nearly 2 years ago. Until they do, this right whale's death and the future ones to come are on their watch. Close quote. And our final article on the front page of the Cape Cod Times, Haley suspends presidential campaign, reported by Carissa Wadick, Rachel Looker, and Ken Tran for USA Today. Nikki Haley announced Wednesday she was suspending her 2024 presidential campaign after suffering disappointing losses across the country on Super Tuesday. Haley's exit paved the way for former President Donald Trump to coast to the GOP nomination, all but guaranteeing a rematch of the 2020 election against President Joe Biden. Haley told a crowd in Charleston, South Carolina, the state she used to govern, that she, quote, has no regrets. I'm filled with the gratitude for the outpouring of support we've received from all across our great country, but the time has now come to suspend my campaign, close quote, she said in a brief speech Wednesday morning. Haley said she will continue to promote the values she campaigned on, lowering the national debt, a smaller federal government, term limits for lawmakers, standing by allies in Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, and turning away from division. Quote, although I will no longer be a candidate, I will not stop using my voice for the things I believe in, she said. Haley told her supporters she launched her campaign for Americans to have their voices heard. Quote, I sought the honor of being your president, but in our great country, being a private citizen is privilege enough in itself, she added. Quote, from the bottom of my heart, thank you, America, close quote. She was the first woman to win a Republican presidential primary, with victories in the District of Columbia and Vermont. In Vermont, she defeated Trump by nearly 3,000 voters, winning 9 delegates. Haley was also the first Indian American woman to run in the GOP race. Haley declined to immediately endorse Trump. Quote, "In all likelihood," close quote, "he will be the Republican nominee," she acknowledged. Quote, "I congratulate him and wish him well. I wish anyone well who would be America's president," she said. "Our country is too precious to let our differences divide us," close quote. A UN ambassador under Trump's administration, Haley towed the Trump line early in her campaign. At the first GOP debate in August, she even said she would support him as the party's nominee if he were a convicted felon. However, she sharpened her rhetoric in the final weeks as she courted independent-minded voters. Although Haley insisted that she was not, quote, anti-Trump, close quote, she described him as a, quote, disaster for the Republican Party, unstable and unhinged, close quote. Haley said Wednesday she has always been a conservative Republican and always supported the Republican nominee, but added, quote, "On this question, she did so on many others, Margaret Thatcher provided some good advice when she said, quote, never just follow the crowd. Always make up your own mind," close quote. It is now up to Trump to earn the votes of those in the Republican Party and beyond who did not support him. She said, quote, "I hope he does that," close quote. Biden immediately made an appeal to Haley's base. The president said in a statement that there is a place in his campaign for Haley supporters, whom he said Trump does not want. This winter, Trump said anyone who donated to Haley was MAGA non grata. Quote, "I know there is a lot we won't agree on, but on the fundamental issues of preserving American democracy, on standing up for the rule of law, on treating each other with decency and dignity and respect, on preserving NATO and standing up to America's adversaries, I hope and believe we can find common ground," close quote, Biden said. The president's long-shot competitor, Minnesota Republican Dean Phillips, suspended his own campaign Wednesday. On X, formerly Twitter, Phillips asked his supporters to, quote, "help keep a man of decency and integrity in the White House. That's Joe Biden. Let's use invitation, not confrontation, to welcome Haley supporters," close quote. Though Haley hinted that she wanted an olive branch, Trump wasn't exactly magnanimous in victory. Quote, "Nikki Haley got trounced last night in record-setting fashion, despite the fact that Democrats, for reason unknowns, are allowed to vote in Vermont and various other Republican primaries," close quote, he said in a Truth Social post. He also used the Haley news to make a fundraising pitch, telling donors in a text that it was time to unify the party. Trump did get around to inviting Haley voters to back him, saying Biden is their mutual, quote, enemy. In a surprise, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell formally endorsed Trump Wednesday morning, despite the long-running enmity and estrangement between the two men. McConnell will be stepping down from his leadership role in November. Quote, "It is abundantly clear that former President Trump has earned the requisite support of Republican voters to be our nominee for President of the United States. It should come as no surprise that as nominee, he will have my support," close quote, McConnell said in a statement. McConnell touted major conservative wins he and Trump achieved during his presidency, including the 2017 tax reform bill and, quote, "a generational change of our federal judiciary," including the Supreme Court. Quote, "I look forward to the opportunity of switching from playing defense against the terrible policies the Biden administration has pursued to a sustained offense geared towards making a real difference on improving the lives of the American people," close quote, he said. McConnell's announcement followed a series of private talks among aides to the combative Republican leaders who had not spoken in years. The Senate GOP leader blamed Trump for the insurrection of January 6, 2021, calling it, quote, a disgraceful dereliction of duty, close quote. In turn, Trump accused McConnell of disloyalty. Trump got a smaller, symbolic endorsement as well. Representative Ralph Norman, Republican from South Carolina, the only House Republican to have endorsed Haley, told reporters Wednesday morning he intends to support Trump 100%. We've reached the middle of our broadcast, and so we move to obituaries. We have three today. The first is for Larry Hake. Larry Hake of Harwich, Massachusetts, formerly of Fairfield, Ohio, was called home to be with God on February 28, 2024, after a valiant years-long battle with Parkinson's disease. Larry was born on May 22, 1943, to Edward and Flora Hake, Brunswick, in Cincinnati, Ohio. He graduated from Green Hills High School before being drafted in the Army, where he served stateside during the Vietnam War. It was there that he met the love of his life, his wife of 58 years, Lori Christine Grindel. Larry worked for General Electric for nearly 40 years in Ohio, and through his work, he was able to travel the world. He loved sharing stories of his adventures, but as much as he loved his professional life, nothing meant more to him than his family. He never left his house for an errand without trying to get one of his kids to join him. One of his favorite sayings was, quote, "You will never look back on your life and wish you worked more," close quote. He walked this earth with integrity, kindness, and gentleness every day of his life. He was the kind of person that never met a stranger, and those who have met him have nothing but kind words to describe Larry. He enjoyed volunteering for Habitat for Humanity, Senior Bingo, expertly painting people's houses, and will be remembered as an easygoing coach and mentor to the many who played soccer for him. He was a devoted Catholic, an avid gardener, fisherman, and golfer, and helped establish the community garden in the family pantry in Harwich. He was a fan of Mazda Miatas, though also always from afar, loved his Ford Mustang and all things Cincinnati. He was a huge Cincinnati Reds and Bengals fan and grew to love the Boston Red Sox. Larry is survived by his wife, Lori, his sister, Char Browning of Ohio, his daughter, Holly Brown, son-in-law, Matt, grandchildren, Matthew and Lexi, his son, Larry Hake, daughter-in-law, Heek, grandchildren, Lauren and Kylie, and his daughter, Jennifer Brueck, son-in-law, Matt, grandchildren, Paul and Zach. They and countless others who had the privilege of knowing Larry, even briefly, will always remember him as one of the most caring people ever to have lived. The family would like to extend a heartfelt thanks to Pam McMaster, who was Larry's live-in caregiver for the last 6 months of his life. Her loving care for Larry made those final days truly joyous and meaningful for him, and for that we're forever grateful. Services in Ohio will be Friday, March 8th, with visitation from 9 a.m. until time of Mass at 10:30 a.m. at Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Fairfield, followed by a private burial in Gate of Heaven Cemetery. A celebration of Larry's life will be planned for the summer of 2024 on Cape Cod. In lieu of flowers, Larry would have loved to be remembered with donations in his name to Habitat for Humanity, 411 Mass 6A, No. 6, Yarmouthport, Massachusetts, 02675, and or the Family Pantry of Cape Cod, 133 Queen Anne Road, Harwich, Massachusetts, 02645. Our next obituary is for Gary Dale Jensen. Gary Dale Jensen, 76, passed away peacefully at home in Centerville, Massachusetts, on March the 2nd, 2024. He was surrounded by his loving family. Born in Richmond, Virginia, June 16, 1947, he was the son of the late Robert L. Jensen, M.D., and Barbara Bobby Shute Jensen. Gary earned his R.N. degree from Southern University, Collegedale, Tennessee. He later earned his master's degree from Webster University. Retiring as a lieutenant colonel after a distinguished 24 years of military service, divided into 8 years Air Force, 2 years Army, and 4 years of the reserves. Gary decided to take on civilian life, moving to Uncasville, Connecticut, and his final resting place, Centerville, Massachusetts. Gary will be deeply missed by his family and friends. He leaves behind a daughter, Ann Jensen Villano, and husband, Sean, sons, Sean Jensen, Damian Jensen, David R. Jensen, and 10 grandchildren. Two sisters, Claudia Guthrie and Debbie Jensen. One sister-in-law, Kathy Pickowitz Sullivan, and husband, Roger. Two brother-in-laws, Anthony Pickowitz, David Pickowitz, and wives, Kathy. Gary is preceded by his beloved wife of 34 years, Marjorie Pickowitz Jensen, and his dear son, Christopher M. Jensen. Gary had many interests over the years: hunting, fishing, sailing, woodworking, canning, gardening, and travel in his RV. And after a devotion to his nursing degree, career, helping others through volunteerism was close to his heart. That is why Gary says that, in lieu of flowers, a generous donation to St. Vincent de Paul Food Pantry, 21 Cross Street, Hyannis, Massachusetts, 02601, would be appreciated. At the very top of Gary's list was God and his family. He loved them every day he walked this earth. Friends and family are invited to pay their respects for visitation at Duane Beal and Ames Funeral Home, 160 West Main Street, Hyannis, Massachusetts, 02601, on Saturday, March the 9th, 2024, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Funeral will be Sunday, March the 10th, 2024, 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. at the Cape Cod Seventh-day Adventist Church, 2736 Falmouth Road in Osterville, Massachusetts, 02655. To share a memory or leave a condolence, please visit www.DoanneBealAmesHyannis.com. And our final obituary is for Claire J. Feely. Claire Jean Feely Sorrell, 76, of North Providence, Rhode Island, passed away while surrounded by family and friends on Friday, March the 1st, at Landmark Medical Center in Woonsocket, Rhode Island. Born in Providence, Rhode Island, she was the daughter of the late Edward and Jesse Kehoe Sorrell. She is a graduate of St. Mary Academy Bayview in Riverside, Rhode Island, and she studied at St. Joseph's Hospital of Phlebotomy in Providence, Rhode Island. Mrs. Feely had resided in Centerville, Cape Cod, Massachusetts, before moving to North Providence, Rhode Island, several years ago. She was the managing director of Provident Oil Company, LLC, for 27 years, before retiring in 1999. She leaves a daughter, Heather Jean Feely Weddle, and her husband, Ryan, of Westport, Connecticut. A son, Neil Richard Feely Jr., and his wife, Addie, of Bristol, Rhode Island. A sister, Nancy Sorrell Giguere, and her husband, Joe. And nieces, Jessica Gemma and Michael Brennan, of Coventry, Rhode Island. Terry Maduri, of Roseville, California. And Leanne Triana, of Reno, Nevada. With nephews, Jeffrey Triana, Mark Triana, and Stephen Triana, of Reno, Nevada. Eric Feely of Beavertown, Oregon, Roger Feely and Christopher Feely of Sarasota, Florida, and the late David Triana. Grandchildren, John Weddle, 13, Benjamin Weddle, 10, Landry Feely, 8, and Pippa Feely, 4. She will be missed by her loving cousins, Robert Driscoll, Peggy Lawton, William Kehoe, Barbara Goodrich, Walter Kehoe, and Tucker Kehoe. Her funeral will be Saturday, March the 9th at 8:45 a.m. from the Frank P. Trainer and Sons Funeral Home, 982 Warwick Avenue, Warwick, Massachusetts. Warwick, Rhode Island. A mass of Christian burial in St. Martha's Church, 2595 Pawtucket Avenue, East Providence, at 10 a.m. The calling hours are Friday, 4 to 7 p.m. In lieu of flowers, donations in her memory to the American Stroke Association will be appreciated. www.stroke.org. Burial will be in Gate of Heaven Cemetery, East Providence, Rhode Island. www.trainorfh.com, and that's spelled www.trainorfh.com. More news from the Cape Cod Time for Thursday, March the 7th. This article is entitled "Act Fast to Snag a Summer Rental in Massachusetts," reported by Ruth Thompson of Wicked Local for USA Today Network. It's not even spring yet, but if you're thinking about renting a vacation home for a week this summer, you may already be too late. According to several real estate experts, people who are serious about reserving accommodations near the beach or at campsites did so months in advance. Quote, "Summer rentals near the beach are few and far between anyhow, said Liz Charlton, a realtor with Jack Conway Real Estate, which is housed in Hanover, which is based in Hanover, but has 23 offices sprinkled throughout eastern Massachusetts. Quote, "A lot of these cottages that were once available as rentals have been developed as year-round residences. There are just not so many summer rentals as there used to be," close quote. "Inventory is not so much a problem as finding an available summer rental," added realtor Carol Sheroff, owner of Atlantic Vacation Homes in Gloucester. Quote, "We always have beautiful homes," she said. Quote, "But the earlier they reach out about a rental, the better. We have many people who rent with us in the summer months who want to return the following year, so they make their reservations then. With the advance of software and the internet, it's easy to get our calendars up as soon as we can. By the end of summer, early fall, we have our rates and everything set up for the following year. People book all year," close quote. The most in-demand rentals are those near the beach, anything from a condo to a three-bedroom house. The 4th of July week remains a popular time for people to get away, although Sheroff said August is actually a bit stronger. Quote, "It's hotter and the water is warmer," she said. In more recent years, Sheroff said there has been increased interest in June and September bookings. Quote, "We see a lot of people traveling from different countries," she said. "In September, people will be traveling to take their kids to college and stop for a few days vacation," close quote. Costs remain consistent with pricing from the past couple years, experts say. The vacation rental interest is a growing industry, but rental beware. It's always a good idea to research properties ahead of time, as well as those offering what's available, real estate pros say. If it sounds too good to be true, it usually is. Going through a local real estate agent to find a summer rental is something both Charlton and Sheroff recommend. Quote, "Local realtors are very helpful when planning a vacation of any sort, as they know the communities and local amenities, beaches, boating, fishing, golf, etc.," Charlton said. Sheroff suggests that those who are considering booking a summer rental to research professionally managed properties. Quote, "We're licensed, we're insured, we have everything that's needed for the property, and we promise a happy experience is a clean home," she said. "We're there for our guests," close quote. Sheroff also recommends booking directly with the company. Quote, quote, "You'll get the best price," she said. And here's another story about whales, this one a little more positive. Expert, quote, warming seas likely brought a gray whale to the region," reported by Heather McCarron. An unusual visitor to local waters has caused a stir among region's marine scientists, a gray whale. Researchers with the New England Aquarium's aerial survey team on Tuesday reported spotting the whale 30 miles south of Nantucket during a flight on Friday. A sighting, they said, is, quote, incredibly rare, considering the species has been extinct in the Atlantic Ocean for more than two centuries. Typically found in the North Pacific, the animal's presence here suggests further evidence of advancing global warming that's increasingly rung alarm bells in the nation's halls of government, science, and environmental stewardship. Quote, while we expect to see humpback, right, and fin whales, the ocean is a dynamic ecosystem and you never know what you'll find. These sightings of gray whales in the Atlantic serve as a reminder of how quickly marine species respond to climate change, given the chance, close quote, said Orla O'Brien, Associate Research Center Scientist at the New England Aquarium's Anderson Cabot Center for Ocean Life. Like North Atlantic right whales, frequent visitors to Cape Cod Bay, gray whales lack a dorsal fin. Instead, they have a dorsal hump and several bumps called knuckles between the hump and their tail flukes. They have short pectoral fins and are mottled gray and white in color. Growing to about 49 feet, gray whales are among the top 10 largest baleen cetaceans, coming in eighth under blue, fin, sperm, right, bowhead, humpback, and sei whales, and above brides and minke whales. The whale could have made its way here by other routes, but the most likely one is via the once fabled and notoriously perilous Northwest Passage, a system of deep channels spanning about 900 miles from east to west through Canada's Arctic archipelago. The passage, which was unsuccessfully and at times tragically pursued by many famous explorers starting in the late 15th century, including John Cabot, Sir Francis Drake, Captain James Cook, Henry Hudson, and Sir John Franklin among them, has long been sealed by ice. But over the past 15 to 20 years, it's been free of ice during the summer, coinciding with rising global temperatures. This offers an opportunity for air-breathing marine mammals from the Pacific to transit the passage, and vice versa. Michael Moore, a senior biologist at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, and author of, quote, We Are All Whalers, The Plight of Whales and Our Responsibility, close quote, agrees the gray whale visitor likely came through the passage, which runs about 500 miles north of the Arctic Circle and is fewer than 1,200 miles from the North Pole. The whale, he said, could have been hanging out off the Cape all winter. In his view, it's a double-edged sword. The opportunity to travel into, quote, new, old territory is great for gray whales, Moore said, but it's not so good as an example of how warming seas are undertaking a wholesale remaking of physical, chemical, and biological ocean processes, close quote. And while it's cool to see a gray whale here, he admitted, quote, I have major misgivings about how this will turn out for planet Earth. We can and should do much, much more to reduce the worldwide human footprint, close quote. Over the last 15 years, New England Aquarium scientists say there have been five gray whale sightings in the Atlantic, as well as one in the Mediterranean, off Israel in 2010, off Namibia in 2013, off Morocco and France in 2021, and off Florida in December. The researchers suspect the whale now traveling off New England shores may be the same one spotted off the coast of Florida. Philip Hamilton, a senior scientist at the Anderson Cabot Center, said the whale's presence here is, quote, really interesting, close quote. He, too, believes that gray whales who've passed into the Atlantic in recent years, quote, almost definitely have to be coming through the Northwest Passage, close quote. Other routes, via Cape Horn at the southern tip of South America, or by way of the Indian Ocean, would suggest extraordinarily long migrations for animals, even for animals known to have one of the longest round-trip migration routes in the world, about 12,500 miles. They typically migrate from feeding waters in the Arctic region of the North Pacific, also known as the Bering Sea, to calving waters off Baja, Mexico. During the March 1 sighting, the New England Aquarium scientists observed the newest gray whale visitor repeatedly diving and then resurfacing, likely as it was feeding. The team watched the animal for about 45 minutes. O'Brien said during the flight she was reluctant to suggest out loud that they'd come across a gray whale, quote, because it seemed crazy, close quote. Research technician Kate Lemley said she was also in a state of disbelief. Quote, my brain was trying to process what I was seeing because this animal was something that should not really exist in these waters. We were laughing because of how wild and exciting this was to see an animal that disappeared from the Atlantic hundreds of years ago, close quote, she said. According to National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's fisheries, gray whales were at one time common across the northern hemisphere, but are now normally found only in the North Pacific. Populations in the North Pacific at one time were commercially hunted near to extinction. In the 1930s and 40s, international conservation efforts worked to protect the whales from overfishing, and in the 1980s, the International Whaling Commission put a moratorium on commercial whaling. Around 26,000 gray whales are in the eastern North Pacific, according to the Oceanic Society, a conservation nonprofit, and the species there is listed as one of least concern. The Atlantic population of gray whales was not so fortunate as their Pacific cousins, hunted to extinction by the 18th century. The last historical report aquarium scientists were able to find of an Atlantic gray whale was dated to 1740. O'Brien and Hamilton said seeing a gray whale in the Atlantic is pretty exciting, but researchers still consider the animals extinct here since, quote, there's no evidence of a breeding population, close quote. Hamilton said the sighting represents another example of what climate change over the long term could look like and, quote, shows that these animals are pretty adaptable. I love the surprise, he said. We never know what we're going to see when we go out in a boat or up in the air, even though we've been doing it for years, close quote. And for some sports news, the headline article from the sports section is entitled Sandwich Girls Basketball's Dominant Second Half Sends Them to the Elite Eight, reported by Courtney Jacobs of the Cape Cod Times. Sandwich girls basketball head coach Mike Barrett said the team's goal this year was to go a step further in the playoffs than they did last season. Mission accomplished. Sandwich lost in the Division III Sweet 16 last season, but this season was a different story. The number 7 Blue Knights beat the number 23 North Reading 73-46 on Tuesday to advance to the Elite Eight for the first time in program history. Despite the final score, the historic win did not come easy. The good thing about basketball is that there are two halves to be played. The late college football coach Paul Bear Bryant had a saying, "Don't give up at halftime. Concentrate on winning the second half." Sandwich started the game on an 8-0 run and led by as many as 13 points in the first quarter. It looked as though they were going to cruise to their 10th straight win. In the second quarter, they were held to 7 points, and just like that, they trailed 29-26 at halftime. Barrett said the message at halftime was simple, quote, "You have to play as a team," Barrett told his team in the locker room. The short and simple message was heard loud and clear, especially by junior captains Maddie Lawrence and Avery Cobbin. The Blue Knights have been an inside-outside offensive team all season long, but when one isn't working, you have to rely on the other. Quote, "In our first half, our outside game wasn't really falling for us, but we knew we had the size advantage," Cobbin said. Quote, "We knew we had to adjust and use our inside size to our advantage." Santwich used their inside game with Lawrence, and it worked to perfection as she dominated the paint with 21 third-quarter points. Quote, I definitely rely on my teammates all the time, and I think it's important to trust all four people that are on the court, close quote, Lawrence said. Cobbin added in another 7 points as the duo combined for 28 of the Blue Knights' 29 third-quarter points. This gave Sandwich a 55-43 lead into the fourth quarter. In the final quarter, it was the third junior captain, Aubrey Schwager, who put the nail in the coffin with 8 fourth-quarter points. Aubrey started to realize that instead of trying to take it to the hoop to pull up for a jumper, Barrett said. The trio of Lawrence, 33 points, 7 rebounds, 4 blocks, Cobbin, 14 points, 6 rebounds, 3 block, and Schwager, 11 points, 7 rebounds, combined for 58 points, 20 rebounds, and 7 blocks. Another starter, sophomore Paige Morrison, nearly had a double-double with 9 points and 9 rebounds. The Blue Knights have been nearly perfect this season with a 21-1 record. That one loss came at the hands of their next opponent in the Elite Eight, the number 2 Norwell Clippers. On December 15th, the Blue Knights beat league opponent Norwell 45-32 at home. The Clippers have not lost one game since then, which included a 54-41 win over Sandwich on January the 25th. To sum it up, both teams have one loss on the season, and they are both to each other. The two will face off on Friday, with Sandwich playing in the only gym, Norwell High School, they suffered a loss this season. Quote, the kids love to play them. It will be a good game. They're a good team, Barrett said. Norwell's 20-game streak win versus Sandwich's 10-game win streak. One team's streak and a season will end with their second loss, while the other will move on to the Final Four. This is what playoff basketball is all about. That's all we have time for today. This has been Daphne reading the Cape Cod Times for Thursday, March the 7th. Have a great weekend, and don't forget to set your clocks forward Saturday night, Sunday morning.